We're good.
We're good. We're on.
Where are we? What are we doing?
Where?
What happened to Corey?
He got better looking.
In a new accent.
Hey, say.
He's still in the room. It'd be nice. He's still in the room.
Welcome back. Those of you joining us live, I hope you had a good breakfast, lunch, or dinner based on where you are in the world. Those of you seeing this on replay mode, I hope you had a good 3 seconds as you tried to find the next link to be able to play this particular video. But we've swapped out one of our presenters to be able to help out, and I'm joined now by Adam Hall.
Thank you.
And explain a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do and why you're here.
I am here. So we're doing this jumpstart, and I look after the access and information protection scenarios that are new in Windows Server 2012 R2. This is going to cover everything from getting people access to resources, securing information, and also we're going to go through the IT side today of how we actually build this. So it's not quite as scary as it might sound.
Okay. Well, Corey and I were talking about this originally to figure out how we're going to be able to carve up this different responsibility for who's doing what and stuff like that.
Yep.
And when it got to this particular module, he said, you know, you really should probably just see if Adam's available. And luckily, there happens to be a coinciding conference that's going on right now, but you're at that conference. And so I'm like, hey, if you can come down, fantastic. Let's go off and talk about this.
Happy to be here.
Perfect. At the slides-wise agenda for what's being covered so far, you've now in the home stretch for access information protection with Windows Server 2012 R2. And once again, if you're interested in taking a look at downloading any of the software from the evaluations and preview versions, are available at aka.ms/ms2012r2 and also System Center 2012 R2 preview at aka.ms/sc2012r2 as well. We did some stuff with virtual desktop infrastructure or VDI infrastructure before the break that we just did, and now we're going to be going into AIP sort of stuff. And
awesome.
You know, some of the things you're going to be showing us today, you showed off as part of keynote for TechEd North America 2013,
indeed,
and also TechEd Europe in there as well.
Yep.
And you know, how would you kind of explain this for access information is kind of what we use to explain what this. How do you explain this to like a layperson that's just coming into the technology?
So it's a matter of thinking about things like the BYOD, the bring your own device scenario, and you've got people with iPads, people with machines that you know nothing about. These, you know, you have no knowledge of them. You do not manage them. They bring them into an environment and they expect to be able to do their work.
Mm-hmm.
And from an IT perspective, that's pretty scary. How do I like give people access to information? What happens if they lose it? They sell it. It gets broken. It gets stolen.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make sure that whatever ends up on that device is secure? And if something does happen to that device, good or bad, you can do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so with when we went into planning for Server 2012 R2, one of the areas we looked at was, well, we've got this big investment in Active Directory. We've got a big investment coming in or going on with Azure AD. And we had all of these technologies that focused on the managed device. But the reality is the consumerization of IT, the bringing of your own device into the environment, it's not a trend, it's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And every customer I get the chance to talk to is saying, I've got iPads in my environment, I've got Android in my environment, I've got Windows non-managed devices. How do I cope with this? And so we looked at what are the things we need to be able to do. We need to be able to publish information and make it available to those devices. We need to be able to secure that information. And we also need to get data onto these devices. We've got a great investment in SkyDrive for the consumer world in terms of getting information everywhere. We've got a deep investment in SharePoint and SkyDrive Pro for the information worker, collaboration, and really rich working. But what about just general files and files sitting on file servers? How do we get those out there? And so we worked on the feature that's now known as Work Folders.
Mm-hmm.
And basically making that information from file servers available everywhere from a corporate file server.
So this isn't a scary thing.
It's not a scary thing.
It's a controlled way of being able to get access to the information for
yes.
people that need to be able to work and function with these different types of devices that you may or may not have any control over.
That's correct.
And you have varying levels of control. I mean, in the past, it was always a matter of, you know what, I had a laptop, I had a desktop, it was deployed and given to me,
mm-hmm.
and I had full control over it, it was managed, a group policy that was all applied to it, and it was locked down or open based on the way that I decided to do stuff.
Yep.
This is a different way of thinking about this.
It is, and it's an evolution. If you go all the way back to sort of the mainframe, big screen size, you had a centralized data source with just keyboard and mouse commands going down. Then we moved into the server client, very controlled. People went into the office, they sat at their desk, and the machine was secured physically in terms of on the desk, in an environment, and you knew everything about it. we had the mobile ecosystem start to come around with laptops. And then the challenge came, well, remote working became the problem of how do I work when I'm at home but have access to resources? And now we've taken that next step, which is just completely unmanaged devices and getting people to work that way. And it's been a continual evolution. The reality is that that end state of any device access information is now hit in reality. And now we're coping with that.
Experience-wise on these devices is going to be varying greatly based on the type of device that they're going to be using? Or
to some degree. If you look at what we're doing, there's two sides. I'm covering the access information side. We also have the user and device management side, so the Windows Intune configuration side. From the Intune configuration side, the experience is remarkably similar. The company portal, which is how we get apps and information and configuration down to those devices, looks remarkably similar across all of the devices, a very consistent kind of look and feel. From an experience point of view in the AIP world, it is going to vary slightly by platform, but the overall IT side is exactly the same, and the end user experience is close enough that people that are on multiple devices will still understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, from a preparation experience, I guess you would say, like what sort of back-end infrastructure is going to be required to be able to pull off some of these kind of things inside of my environment? Do I have to be all... every single thing, lock, stock, and barrel, up to 2012, 2012 R2? Can I have a mixed environment? Sure. Do I have to make sure I'm at different functional levels? What sort of minimum bar of entries do you have to worry about?
So pretty much from a feature point of view, these are all features that are in Windows Server 2012 R2.
Right.
So work folders, the new ADFS, the web app proxy, and the Windows 8.1 client are all required for some of these things.
Yep.
From an Active Directory point of view, there is a schema change required for the scenarios we're going to go through today, both the workplace join and the work folders from an auto discovery point of view. That schema can be taken all the way down to server 2003. We don't support 2003, so therefore that scenario is unsupported, but it does work. We support from 2008 upwards, the schema change being applied. Now, obviously, there's a lot of benefits in Active Directory 2012 from a virtualization, a management infrastructure, and what you can do. But if you're still in the process of upgrading, we take you all the way down to 2008.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, again, AIP, Access Information Protection. I've got three quick little bills here to see what we've got. And you know what? I think this is going to be the last slide we're going to talk about at this point. Except, we can do one more after this one here.
So this is just a summary of really the capabilities that we consider part of getting access to information and protecting that information.
Right.
So the registration, and I'm going to take you through what a lot of these look like today, what the registration of a device actually looks like. I'm going to take you behind the scenes, and we're going to go through pretty much the keynote environment that we did at TechEd, both in North America and Europe, but I'm going to show you how we built that and show you what's actually happening behind the scenes whilst we do these things. We're going to connect to an internal resource. We're going to be prompted for ADFS claims credentials, so we're going to have to do that. From a unified in the environment point of view, we have put a lot of work into the integration between on-premises Active Directory and Windows Azure Active Directory and building that out, and we can talk a little bit about where we're going with that. And then we're going to take a look at work folders, dynamic access control, and how we can protect that information against accidental loss when you lose that device. So we're going to go through all of these things.
So the last build out for where this is at for being able to set this up?
Yeah, so just as a scene setter, and this is the only slide that we're really going to go through, is the goal here is to enable users to work from any device and have access to all their corporate resources. We do the registration, which gives us not only a record in Active Directory, but also it gives us a single sign-on.
Mm-hmm.
We put a certificate on the device. We can use that for a second factor augmented authentication and take it forward with Workplace Join. From an Intune and Configuration Manager point of view, we provide the ability to manage not only on-premises but also mobile devices with Windows Intune, which also gives them access to the company portal for apps and configuration information. And then we really have three ways of connecting those devices back in. We have the traditional network-orientated connection. So from our point of view, that's Direct Access and VPN. We do have new automatic VPNs. So when you launch an app and if it requires a VPN connection, it will automatically fire that VPN connection up for you. We have the publishing of resources and with the web application proxy, which is a very forward-looking mechanism around publishing service-oriented web applications through OAuth and standards-based publishing and claims. And then we have the topic that you covered just previously, which is the remote desktop VDI scenarios, which really is about giving a centralized access to resources across all the devices.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like a context for what we're going to go through. And we're pretty much going to cover most of what's on that slide.
Okay, well, the part that interests me is you're going to actually show us all the behind-the-scenes pieces this as well. It's not just like the, here is Chris and here's how he's working with this new environment. You're actually going to show us what's required to set them up, how you got it running in the demo environment, and also being able to understand the different pieces required to get this all working.
That's right. So,
okay, well, I'm going to let you steer and go ahead in the demos.
I'm going to keep my eye open
on the chat and on the questions that come up, and I'll bring them up as we
please
go
ask questions on the way through. We'll do our best to answer them all.
So you got it.
If we could bring up the demo environment. So this is my demo server, and I am running a server here that has eight CPU cores. I have 16 gig of RAM, and I have 3 solid-state drives.
Okay.
So basically, this is running on around about 8 gig of RAM is required to boot these VMs up just to run a lab to put all of this together. We ran it at Techib on a Lenovo W530 laptop with 2 500 gig solid-state drives.
I'm intimately familiar with that particular
model. Exactly, yeah. So basically, the keynote environment that we used had a Surface out on stage, and we had a Lenovo W530 backstage running these VMs.
Yep.
So basically, that's all that we had to do all of these demos that we have running.
That's changed a lot from over the years from having racks upon racks of
Absolutely.
Servers.
and it's a combination of the hypervisor being more efficient with the way it shares resources, but also we've done a lot of work with Windows Server 2012 R2 to reduce the footprint as well. So it's very quick to boot up, very lean as an environment. And as you can see, you can see how much RAM each of these is soaking up. The biggest VM I have is the one that's running ADFS and rights management, which is doing a lot of work when we access those resources. It's doing all the authentications. It's running a SQL database to store all that information. So that's the biggest VM. The rest of them, as you can see, we've got 2 8.1 clients. We have an R2 domain controller. We have the web application proxy, which has a leg internal and a leg to an external environment.
Yep.
We have the work folders server, which is also doing all the dynamic access control. ADFS and rights management can go together on a box. And then we have just basic web server, which is just serving up a claims-based application for demo purposes.
Okay.
So that's basically what we've got running under the hood. And so what I thought I'd do is take you through the end-to-end demo around someone trying to get access to resources, being denied, needing to register their device. And as we go through each step, I'll break it open and show you what's actually happening behind the scenes as well as at the front end. We'll go through the proxy and ADFS from how we do the conditional access, the multi-factor call that we did with PhoneFactor and so on. And then we're going to go back and take a look at work folders and how we do the automated rights management and what's actually doing the work behind the scenes there.
Okay.
So let's go and take it apart. So I'm running all of these machines deliberately virtual. Typically, we would do this on a physical device and connect it in. But just for demo purposes today, I have a virtual machine running here. All of these machines, both client and server, are running the preview builds, 9431. So 8.1 client and R2 preview build for server. So we have a client here, and Chris has come in. He's brought his device in, and we're just going to go through that same demo that we did where we try and get to a resource, and we're going to try and just launch up an app. This could be an application, and it's worked. That's not supposed to happen. One moment. Let me just check that the environment has actually been reset. There we go. The demo gods are not necessarily on my side. There you go. I'm already joined. I will undo what I just did. Pretend you never saw that. You never saw anything. All right. All right. Let's do that again. We're going to try and launch our application. And now it's going to say, you've never logged onto this environment before. You've never registered your device. And now we need to go through the claims. So I am logging on as my demo user, Chris Johnson.
And that's basically your corporate account you're trying to have access to, right?
That's right. And I'm going to enter his credentials and try and sign in. Now, this is giving me an error message, and you can customize this. You can see it's just blue on the left, but in the keynote, we had a nice picture and so on.
Like it says, oops.
And it says, oops, something went wrong. You can configure all of this. And basically what we're saying to Chris is, hey, it's great that you brought a device in, but you're not going to get access to these resources unless you play by some of our rules.
Okay.
And what we're saying to him is, you can join your device to the workplace. What that's going to do is make it known to me. We will do this on 8.1 and iOS at GA, and we have Android and Windows 7 to follow after that.
Okay.
And so basically we're getting a message saying, hey, great, you want access to this? Please go register your device.
Yep.
So we'll go and do that now, and we'll go back to where I just was, which is to do the workplace join. And again, we're going to pipe in Chris's credentials and hit join. Now, the one difference we have got in this demo than what we did at TechEd is I'm not going to do the phone factor call today. Okay. We don't have reception in here, so...
But say, we do have a question or two on the phone factor piece. You'll talk about it, but we're not going to actually show it today.
We're not going to show it today, but basically I'm going to enter Chris's credentials and sign in, and this is going to talk back to Active Directory via the web app proxy and ADFS, and into that it's going to put a certificate on the device, and it's going to create a device object. I'll cover the phone factor question in a minute when we get to ADFS, and I'll show you how we configure that and do it on the way through. So we've now done the workplace join. There is now a new certificate on my device. If we go into the MMC console, we can see it there. And we've created a record in Active Directory that we'll go and have a look at in just a sec. So now if we go and relaunch that application, and there's a nice bug in IE in this build, which doesn't clear. Try and launch that application again. CHJohn. Enter Chris's credentials and sign in, and we now can see our application. Now, I've deliberately taken the most ugliest web application I can find.
That looks really disgusting.
But the interesting thing about this is an application. It's part of the SDK, so I use it for a deliberate demo purpose. This is available to you guys if you follow the instructions on TechNet for building out this lab, which we've published on TechNet. It takes you through how to install this application and make it work.
Okay, that's actually a question that just came up, is that there is guidance on how to actually set this up on TechNet available.
Absolutely. There is a scenario in TechNet, and you can build the exact lab that I built that you're seeing.
Yep.
You can build this lab using the TechNet instructions from the ground up.
Good stuff.
Including this demo application, which is in the SDK. Now, this is an application, and what it's showing us is all the claims that we have made from the device against Active Directory.
Yep.
And the one that is most interesting is this one here, which is registered user. This is actually the claim that was preventing us coming through in the first instance.
Yep.
So when we did the workplace join, basically the rule that we've got is the device must be registered before you can launch the app. When we first entered it, is registered user was false, and so therefore we got blocked. It is now true because we've done the workplace join, and we can now see it. So it's a good demo app to see not only all the claims that you're making, but also you can see how the rule is kicking in as well.
Okay.
Now, so that's kind of like what it looks like from the back end. But let's take a look and see what actually happened behind the scenes and how that all came to be. So if I move over to the domain controller. So the first thing I'll show you is what was the result of me doing that registration. A certificate ended up on the device, but also in Active Directory, if we open up the Active Directory Administrative Center, drill down into our domain, you'll see we have a new top-level OU because within Active Directory. And so each of the devices that I've registered now turns up as a record. We can take a look. The GUID that you see on the screen is the identification for the device.
Right.
And if we take a look at the properties of that and take a look at the attribute editor, we can see a number of pieces of information come back from the client. Where possible, we come back with the OS device type, so we can see it's Windows, we get the device version, we can see whether we are managing with Intune. We have not registered this device with Intune, so we are not being managed at the moment. We get to see who the owners are, we get to see what the GUID ID is, and all the kind of metadata that we require to actually have this. Now, this object is not a security principle, so you can't apply NTFS permissions using it. It is used solely as part of the registration process and the authentication of the device. Now, I apologize. I do not have Zoomit on this on these servers, installed, so I can't do the Zoom, and I apologize if it's a little bit small on your screen.
You can maximize the screen.
Maximize the screen, that's right.
You got it.
Yeah.
So it's not in the window.
So that's kind of what's happening when we did the registration. That's how, that's what happens. Now,
by registration, you're not domain joined.
We are not domain joined.
It's a workgroup machine.
Correct.
It's a consumer style, whatever kind of device
correct.
That basically does not have domain joined.
Yep.
Because it's not domain joined, there's no group policy going down to this
that's,
guy.
That's correct. We're not doing group policy. We're not managing the device. All that we're doing is doing what I would consider an augmented authentication.
Okay.
I'm using the device, and I've said I'm going to access those resources on this device.
Right, and the resources example that you use was simply an internal web page that we're going to try to get to access to.
I sort of look at it as it's more of a user at device record,
yep.
which is this is Adam's device and this is the device I'm using. IT can take into account the fact that I've acknowledged which device I'm going to use.
Right.
They know that if I lose that device, they can go break that record, delete it, tombstone it, and it won't authenticate anymore. Right. So all I have to do is delete that record, tombstone it, disable it, and I won't be able to access those resources anymore,
okay.
Which is pretty cool. Now, sort of taking a step inwards and working from the outside in, we've seen the end user experience, but how did we get to there? We were coming from the outside world. We were external to the environment. So I want to bring up next the web application proxy, which was the next step technologically on the way in. And the web application proxy is about publishing access to internal resources to external entities. And we do this in two different ways. We can do claims-aware publishing, and we can also just do straight reverse proxy. And I've got examples of both on the screen at the moment. So the claims app that we were accessing, you can see that we have an external URL and an internal URL. We do basic URL translation there. And you can see the pre-authentication is ADFS.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I go to publish something, it's going to ask me, first of all, am I doing an ADFS claims-aware publish, or am I just doing a straight pass-through, which is URL comes in, it says it's over there, go get it. You know, sort of work folders is a good example. You can do straight pass-through authentication, or you can integrate it with claims.
Okay.
So you can kind of go either way. When you do that, the first thing that you see is you get a list of the available applications that we can publish. The web app proxy is actually reading ADFS to see what configurations are available and what it can actually publish. When you do that, the next thing it's going to say is, well, what's the external URL you want to use? Which certificate do you want to use at the edge for the authentication? And where is the backend service that you're connecting to? And that's the key thing about the web application proxy. It is designed to do pre-authentication at the edge.
Okay.
And it's designed to receive the request for access to resources. It goes back to ADFS and says, okay, what are the rules and regulations by which this can come in? What is the certificate? What are the permissions? What are the claims that must be made? Does the user and the device meet those claims? And then based on that, either do a multi-factor lookup or just let the person through once they meet the requirements.
Yep.
That's really what the web app proxy is all about. So that's kind of actually all there is to the web app proxy. It simply does publishing of those resources. Where the real power kicks in is if I move across to ADFS. And ADFS is where all of the real work's been done. Now I've got two versions of the console up here. We really only need one. Okay, so ADFS, for those of you that have used it prior to R2, was a little unwieldy to deploy. It could be hard to configure. And so we did a lot of work on making it easy to deploy, easy to configure, and easy to manage.
Okay.
And so a lot of work's been done in R2. It's got to the point where I can deploy ADFS, I can configure an app, and I can publish it. It's really not that hard. And if I can do it, you guys out there can most definitely use it. What we have within ADFS in R2 is this new authentication policies tab. And what we can do on there is set additional levels of authentication as to how that's going to work and what the rules are. And we do this at two different levels. The first is we have global policies. And global policies are, just like they say, in the absence of any other rule, this is what's going to be enforced. And so we can specify different policies from external and internal. So you can have a rule that says, well, when I access these resources from outside the corporate firewall, these are the rules that apply.
Mm-hmm.
When I am in the corporate network, different rules can apply. You might want multi-factor authentication, for example, only to happen when you're outside the corporate boundary,
right,
as opposed to internal, as an example. So we can do different sets of authentication policies. We do forms and certificate externally. We do forms, Windows Auth, and certificate authent from the intranet. And the little button at the bottom, enable device authentication, that is the one thing that you have to do from an ADFS and web app proxy point of view to enable the registration service to run. There are no out of the box, it is configured, ready to go. There are some other things that I'm going to show you in a minute that you configure around certificates and also DNS entries. But basically, by ticking that box, ADFS and the web app proxy are now ready to process the device authentications and the device registration service.
I do have a question, if you just back up just a little bit, about the workplace join piece for individual devices.
Mm-hmm.
Someone was asking the question, are you able to have multiple joins to different workplaces?
No.
So So basically, you can join one device to the workplace. You can join your device to a particular workplace one given time.
Yep.
And if you're a consultant and you're working at multiple places, you could unjoin from that location. And then if you got a different customer site that has the capability, I could go in and join that particular one.
So the answer is yes and no, and I'll explain what I mean by that. The device registration is per user.
Okay.
So if you had two users on the device, so if you had Atom 1 and Atom 2, you could connect Atom 1 to Contoso and Atom 2 to Fabric-Cam.
Okay.
Okay. The device registration is per user on the device. And so if you set up two different local accounts or you on the device and you logged into each one for each of those companies,
right,
then the answer is yes.
And again, because this is a non-domain join machine
that's
we're
correct.
Talking about, so
that's correct.
Why you have local user accounts that we're talking
yes.
about here.
Now, domain join machines are slightly different.
Right.
And domain join machines, once if I joined this device to the domain, it was a Windows device, and joined to the domain, the ability to do the workplace join is grayed out.
Right.
It can be enabled by your administrator through policy. And there are reasons why you might want to be domain joined and workplace joined. For example, multi-factor authentication at the edge.
Okay.
You might have a domain joined machine that when it accesses from outside the corporate boundary, gets multi-factor authentication at the edge, even though you're a domain joined machine.
Okay.
So that's the answer there.
Yep.
Good question.
No problem. I'll keep on bringing them up as we can.
Absolutely, bring them
up. Just so you know, there is a bit of a time delay for when this actually gets shown online from this, so that's why I had to kind of pull you back for just a minute.
We will answer retrospectively without a problem.
You got it.
So we have the global authentication policies that we talked about, but we also have this new multi-factor authentication policy as well. And you can enforce multi-factor authentication through membership of groups and users. You can do it based on whether the device is registered or not. You can and or based on whether it's outside or inside the environment. And it's a very plug-in model. ADFS has a pluggable model where any multi-factor authentication provider can plug into this. So out of the box, we do certificate authentication, so that's smart cards and things like that.
Yeah.
If I installed PhoneFactor, then I would see PhoneFactor on the list, or Windows Azure Active Auth as it's codenamed at the moment. And also things like RSA and so on could plug into this, and you could use that as to take into account. So basically, for example, I could be a member of a group. I could say that unregistered devices that are coming from external require a smart card.
Okay.
And basically, that rule that I just set up is those three tick boxes.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. So that's at the global level. Then what we have is what's called a per-application configuration. And so you can override those configurations and say, well, maybe there's no MFA at a global level, but for this application, I can configure that multi-factor authentication is required. And I could say that unregistered devices from the extranet require a multi-factor authentication just for this application. So you can categorize your apps between maybe a low business app impact versus something like an HR system.
Yep.
Maybe HR systems or finance systems require a phone factor call, and maybe just getting to the intranet doesn't, as an example.
Okay.
So that's kind of from the outside in, we've gone through, and we're going to come back to ADFS in a little bit as well. But you got a question?
Just a reminder, you called out the concept of phone factor. For those that were not aware and had not seen the Tech Ed demo, can you just do a little bit of explanation about what that
Absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely. So phone factor is a multi-factor authentication mechanism. We purchased, we acquired phone factor about a year ago. They still run as phone factor. And they run both on premises and in the cloud. And so you can integrate it with Exchange, with SharePoint, with websites, LDAP, Radius. There's all these different authentication providers. And basically what it is when I try and access an application, instead of just getting my username and password, it'll also ask me for something else.
Right.
It could be a PIN code or for key fob. It could be a text message that sends me a number and I have to type it in. It could be a phone call that I have to answer the phone and type my PIN or whatever it might
be.
And so by the acquisition of PhoneFactor, we're now moving this into Windows Azure. We're going to make it available as a cloud service and make it easy to integrate with all of our services. But also you can consume that as a service on premises as well. So it runs both as a cloud service against cloud apps as well as on-premises against sort of line of business and other applications that are available there.
Okay.
Great. Good question. So we've been through from the outside in. We've registered the device. We've gained access to it. We've seen the Active Directory record that's there. We've got a certificate on the device. We've seen the policies that are kicking in. We've seen the registration services is running, and we can configure multi-factor authentication. So we've got through the boundary, and we've got to a nice basic web application. Now, that's kind of like a really good start, but what about getting data onto the devices?
So far, we're just talking about access to websites, access to resources, both internal and external.
We've really only covered two-thirds of the access part of it, access and information protection.
Right.
Now, the last piece of access that we have in the portfolio is the ability to synchronize files. And what we have with R2 is a new feature called Work Folders. And Work Folders is a service that runs under the file server role. It requires an R2 file server to be running, and if you want to do discoverability, you must put the Active Directory schema extension in place as well. If you don't do the schema extension, you can just have an R2 file server and Work Folders will work, but your users will need to know what the URL is for Work Folders and type that in.
Oh, okay.
So if we go back to our client again and take a look in the control panel, we have a new control panel applet for Work Folders. And what this does is gives us the ability to see to set up Work Folders. If we go through the wizard, it asks us for either I've discovered you automatically, and that's great, or what is the Work Folders URL location. It is HTTPS based. For lab testing, you can override that in the preview to use just HTTP, but that will go away with RTM.
Right.
So it will be all HTTPS based. Internal, it's just an HTTPS connection using your internal PKI or other certificate mechanisms. If you want to make it available externally, then you just need to publish the URL. Mm-hmm. Any reverse proxy is fine. So long as clients can resolve that record, that DNS record, and can get to HTTPS, insert your Work Folders URL here, it will work.
Okay.
You can publish it through the web app proxy, you can integrate it with ADFS for claims, but basically any publishing mechanism that you have today will work. And so once we set Work Folders up, we then have the ability, under this PC, we have a new top-level folder called Work Folders. And in here, these are the files that are synchronizing down from my file server. Now, for the purpose of the demo today, I'll bring out, this is the URL to the Work Folders server. You can see that's the URL there, server 1, Contoso 2013. It's under the Contoso sync share. My username is chjohn, and we store all the files in a folder called data.
Okay.
Pretty nice and easy there. So we'll just keep that down the bottom there, because as we create things, it's just going to show the synchronization engine and process.
So this is, again, just the user experience of using Work Folders.
This is the user experience of using Work Folders.
Okay.
And so I can come in. Just for argument's sake, we'll create a new folder. We'll call it Jumpstart. We've entered it on the top there, and if we come down to the bottom, you can see there's the Jumpstart 134 as we just created it. Now, you'll notice that the files that are in my local folder here are green, and the ones on the server are not. That's because we've turned on encryption, and files that are EFS encrypted are shown as green in the Windows client.
Right.
And what that allows us to do is, in the event that I lose this machine, I can break that key by deleting the partnership at the back end, and that means that these files will no longer be accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you try and open them, you'll get an access denied.
Oh, okay.
This is integrated with the selective wipe that we have through the company portal. When you leave, when you unenroll your device from management and leave the workplace join, you break that key and the data is no longer accessible. So that's how the data synchronizes backwards and forwards. I'll jump over briefly to the Work Folders server that we have running here, and you'll see that under File and Storage Services, we have a new Work Folders tab.
And this is just a file server inside your organization.
This is just a file server.
It's managed by IT and uses all the same technology you've been talking about for the last 2 days.
That's correct. And what you see here is we have a sync share set up, and we've got a group, which I think we've just got domain users, have access to this share.
Okay.
Now, I'll go through the process of creating a new one so you can see how easy this actually is to configure. We're going to create a new sync share here. And by default, you can either choose an existing share that you have set up on the server. So if you've got existing SMB shares that you want to enable for sync, you can just point Work Folders at those shares and it will work. Or you can enter a local path, which is what we'll do, because we've only got the one share existing there. Let's create a new folder called Jumpstart. And we'll use cjumpstart as our file share. Now, the next thing you're going to get asked for is an important choice that you need to make, and it's about how we store this information. You can either use the user alias or you can use alias at domain. And the interesting, the reason why we offer those two things is if you have users from multiple domains that may end up with the same username, then you want to use the bottom option, which just ensures that you get a unique identifier. We can also choose that we can only sync a specific folder in work folders. So if you have a big home directory, for example, and you want to enable that for sync, but you only want to set up one specific folder that syncs, you can do that here within the configuration.
Okay.
Give it a name, and then we specify who's going to be allowed to use this share. And you can choose any combination of users or groups. So we can enable it just for Chris, for example. So we'll do that. And there's a tick box at the bottom around disabling the inherited permissions. And this is, again, another important decision point. If you're pointing it at an existing share and you tick this box, it's going to override whatever permissions you have and reset them.
Right.
Or you untick it and it'll just flow down whatever permissions you want.
Right.
This is kind of like a decision point around, am I setting up a nice fresh greenfield file server with all of this on it? Or am I inheriting a lot of existing shares that I want to enable for sync? That's a decision point that only you can make.
And just again, from a design process that we're looking at here, groups of people, you're doing this for one individual person.
Yep.
But this can also be done for groups of individuals as well, as far as security is concerned, by choosing a different security principle.
Absolutely. I mean, right. Let's just use the domain.
Or if you had a group that was user. Called Jumpstart Users, you can use Jumpstart Users instead.
We can use domain admins just as an example, and you can add in a number of individuals or groups. Typically, groups would get used for this.
Right.
Then you get two options for device policies. And by default, we have ticked the automatically lock the screen and require a password. And that's a basic. On a mobile device, it requires the user to set a PIN code or some other mechanism to unlock the device.
Okay, it kind of harkens back to the ActiveSync days of
control
of whether or not you're allowed to get
this. You should think about it in exactly the same ways.
Yeah.
And the top one is the important one, that if you want to be able to break the connection and render the data inaccessible, you must tick the top box. Which basically states that the client will encrypt the work folder's data. That's it. On the way through, we hit create. It goes through a very quick PowerShell. And just like that, we've created a new sync share for the users that are there. That's how easy it is. Down the bottom, you can see that we've created that. You can see that Chris Johnson and has been enabled for that. And then further down, we get some information around the sync share volume and what our space looks like. And we also also respect quotas.
Oh, okay.
So if you have quotas set on your file server, and you can apply them to work folders. So you can say, you know, Chris is only allowed to sync 2 GB data, end of story.
Yeah.
And no matter what other space he's got, those quotas will apply. That's all we have to do to configure work folders at the back end. That's it.
It's a file server. Simple. It's a file server, a folder structure that's going to be using all the inherent background stuff of storage spaces and all the rest of sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
And then you go through the enablement process, secure it by groups, policies for what needs to be applied for encryption and or strong password and PIN requirements that are on there, and then securing down to the permission level.
That's great.
Now, an interesting comment came up. It says, dude, I just understood it. This is like SkyDrive for private cloud.
You should think
it's kind of an interesting analogy, I will say.
It is, and I think that the way that I think about this is SkyDrive is for consumer data.
Absolutely.
They don't want work data on there. This is for you at home. This
right.
is your shopping list. This is your personal files, data, that kind of thing. SkyDrive Pro is about taking SharePoint offline and having an IW experience. You can share information. You can collaborate. Workfolders has no way of sharing a document with you.
Right.
Whereas in SkyDrive Pro, I can right-click and say share as or share with, and that information I can share with you and collaborate. So Workfolders is about your data on a file server. SkyDrive Pro is about work group data, team data, as well as your personal data on a SharePoint site sitting in a document library, and it's a very IW-rich experience.
Right.
We are just enabling this at the user level for file servers.
Right. And I'm blown away by this, because I don't even remember. You haven't even showed the whole documents in one, appear in another one just yet. You just showed us how to set it up so far.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we go back to our client, You can see we created that Jumpstart folder.
Right.
And so basically, I do have two clients, and I can show you backwards and forwards. The process is this client syncs up to the server, and then the server back down.
Right.
And so just as way of a proof point, if we bring up our second client, I'll go into the work folder's server, and there you see there's our Jumpstart.
Right.
So just to, if we bring that to the side, let's bring up the second one and bring it to that
two
side.
Two separate machines, assets in the same
here
folder,
we go.
Been synchronized.
So basically you can see on the left is client two, and on the right is client one. And if I create, I'm going to need to scroll down a little bit, the joys of putting multiple things on screens. Let's just create a new text document and hit enter. What we'll see over here in a short space of time is that firewall pop up. There it is. All encrypted. So that's basically going from this machine up to the server and back down in a synchronizer mechanism.
You know this is going to be asked, so I'm going to ask this ahead of time. What happens if I open up both documents at the same time on two different devices?
Oh, that's actually really good. So let's do that.
So you got text in one, different text in a different one.
All right, so let's go. See if we can do this quickly. File save, file save. That is exactly what happens.
Okay.
So
you don't have a collision. You don't have a collision of the same document with contention going on.
Basically,
you get another version of it coming out.
Client one had the document open first.
Right.
And it hit save first. It saw that the file was locked on the other client, and so it created a second file with the name of the client that did the duplication.
Okay.
And so if we open up, there's the test one, and if we open up this one, it's a test two.
Yeah,
that's exactly, we factored that in.
And the question actually just came up. This is from Bart asking that question. And so Bart, we already answered that question.
There we go.
Pay attention to the stream. In a couple seconds, you'll see it.
Absolutely. So let's go back to our original client.
Actually, Bjorn, how would you pronounce that name? Bjorn?
Sure.
Bjorn, he asked the question, is there a sync configuration option for metered connections?
So work
that
folder,
would be built into the client OS.
Work folders respects...
If you choose metered connection.
Correct. And in fact, one moment. I believe we've even exposed it, and it might call me a liar in a sec.
Right there?
There it is, yes.
Sync files over metered connections. By default, it's not
on. Yeah, I can't change it because I don't have a metered connection.
Right.
but basically, it's right there in the interface there. So
what,
you can choose.
What does email tech support do? Anything right now?
It emails
it
you.
It sends an email to rclaws@microsoft.com.
Basically, it opens up mail.
Oh, yeah.
and says it wants to send
an
email.
You have to have a mail account because it's not configured.
Correct. But basically, it is pre-configured. That tech support address is configured at the back end.
Okay.
So you configure what that information
yep.
is. Good question, though. So we've kind of seen how that goes backwards and forwards, but getting information out there is kind of interesting, but we've also got this little capability called dynamic access control.
I've got one more question.
You've got one more question.
It's all right.
Let's go.
Yeah, but this one's probably pretty easy. Wayne is asking, is there a merge function to put these two things together? And that's an easy answer for you, is if you're using something like Word that supports a merge function, then Word would be able to merge these two together, but it's a manual process that you would have to kick off, Wayne. It's not built into the way Word folders.
That's correct. There's no easy way, as far as I'm aware, to merge Notepad files.
Right. well, you could copy... Well, yeah. Depends on the app.
Correct. That is application specific. We don't provide a way of merging them simply for that very reason,
right.
that we would need to be able to read every different type of file.
Right.
It's a good suggestion, though. We could probably look at that for vNext. All right. Is it okay to call something vNext when you haven't even released this one?
vNext, perhaps?
vNext.
There you go. Yeah. The branding police will be after us.
That's right. So we've got this little thing called dynamic access control.
No future looking statements.
That's right. That is not a promise.
Yeah.
That is a promise that I'll look into it. So dynamic access control is about classifying information and saying, based on the content of the files, do I care about what's in there? And if I do care about what's in there, what should I do about it? And an easy example is things like credit card numbers, social security numbers,
right.
IRD numbers,
right.
anything that is sensitive information. And so we've integrated work folders with dynamic access control. And so we'll do a little demo here where we'll create a new document here.
Is it dependent upon it?
It is not dependent on it.
But it can use it if it wants to.
That's correct.
Okay, because I need to kind of step back a little bit and then see which are all the different, you're showing us all these different pieces.
Yep.
Which is required
we'll do a
for
recap
each one.
At
we'll
the
do a recap end. Coming up, just to stay tuned.
So let's create a Jumpstart doc. We'll just bring this one up down there in the bottom so you can see that there. And I have a policy set that anything that I write that has the term vNext in it is going to trigger a policy that is sensitive information. It's something I care about. It's just a blank document. It's fine for demo purposes. So we save that up, and you can see that the file there is 11 kilobytes. Now,
right.
In the background, what's happening is this synchronized up to the server. You can see it down the bottom there. And what is happening, and I'm going to jump over to my work folder server. That's actually a client. Let's go with this one. And I'm going to bring up the file server resource manager.
Right.
And this is where you can configure dynamic access control.
Right. So this is the tool you would use in 2012 for doing dynamic access control.
That's correct. And it has not changed in R2
okay.
whatsoever. So we have a classification rule that if I bring this up, and it, you can see it has just got a rule name, sensitive information. The scope is pointing at that C Contoso sync share, so it's just pointed at our work folder
you
server.
You scoped it down to focus on a specific
that's
folder
right.
structure that's been shared out on the file server.
That's correct. And then we have a classification engine. And what we've done is said we want to do a content classifier, which is a fancy way of saying I'm going to read the file and see
right.
and look for stuff. We can also do folders and PowerShell as well. We've got a policy set that our personally identifier information, which is just a category, is set to high if, and here's where the magic comes in, this string exists. And you can see that I've got a rule that says if the word vNext is in the document, then it is subject to this policy.
Case sensitive?
It is not case sensitive in this one, but if I choose the case sensitive one, it
right.
is.
Okay, so you can actually make it case sensitive.
So you can
this
make
could also
it
be a regular expression.
Or a regular expression. So things like social security numbers, credit cards, you
digit
just put in the
digit number dash, digit number three.
All those
dash,
weird scrolls
yeah, yeah.
that you put
I
in.
I don't remember what those are, but yeah.
Correct, yes. I'm hopeless at them too. I talk to my developers and say, please can I have an engine that looks like this?
But they do say complex regular expressions can reduce classification speed. Check MSDN for more details. That's
right.
Where you're going to find out where their expressions
there is a whole. There is actually in TechNet a whole list of
right.
how to build these things out.
Right.
And you can even specify how many times it needs to occur.
So if it only happens once,
apparently
it's okay.
if there's one credit card once, it's okay. But if it occurs
more
twice,
than okay.
maybe it's there. So that's the engine that is actually running. And the evaluation, sorry,
and with the way that rule is written, it didn't have to be the same credit card. It could be based on the expression, as long as it had the credit card format
correct.
That
correct.
Appeared twice.
When you do a regular expression,
right.
it's just scanning the document saying, is there anything that matches what I'm looking
right.
for? If
right.
I find it, boom, nail it. So that's the rule that runs. And what that does is adds a piece of metadata to the file that says, this is now tagged as PII information
right.
with a value of high.
Right.
That's step one.
And this has to be running on a server that's running 2012, 2012 R2.
2012 or 2012 R2. 2012 for dynamic access control.
Right.
2012 R2 if you want it to apply to work folders.
Right.
So what we've then got is what's called a file management task. And this is how we did the automated rights management. And basically what we've got here is a task that is, again, scoped down to look at the share that we're looking for. We've got it configured that the action we're going to do is an RMS encryption. This is out-of-the-box functionality. You can also expire the file, or you can do a custom command against it.
Okay.
And it automatically reads our rights management server and says, what are all the templates that are available and which one do you want? I just created a very basic sensitive information template, which I'll show you in a sec, or you can do it manually if you want to type all of that kind of stuff in.
Yep.
And then the condition is basically saying, well, that tag that we just got, if it matches what we're looking for, then I want you to run this task.
Right.
So it's kind of a cascading thing. Read the file, classify the file, and then action something against the file. So we've now set a rule or a condition that says when that tag is met, and we can also specify a schedule of which you can run it daily, monthly, days of the thing, you can limit how long it runs, or we've got it set to run continuously so it always just happens.
Yep.
And so that's what's happening at the back end as I save that file up. Now, just while we are in there, we'll go back to our ADFS server, which has rights management. And there is the template that I created for rights management.
Mm-hmm.
Installing rights management is pretty straightforward with the Active Directory integration. It's very much a next configuration. You do need to have a certificate available because you're going to encrypt everything with a key, and then you create a template. And
am I going to open up a big Pandora's box if I ask about licensing on this sort of stuff?
Sure.
Is it all included? Is it an extra license you have to worry about?
So rights management is an additional CAL.
Okay.
So it's basically you have the server, and then you have additional rights management CALs. They're part of a number of licensing schemes that are available
to you. Just wanted to make sure.
Absolutely. Now, creating that template is pretty straightforward. You create a new template. We need to give it a name, so we can call this one Jumpstart. Give it a description, and then we go through the wizard, and it's going to say, well, who is this going to apply to? And we're just going to tick everybody, because we want everybody to be able to access this, although you can put rules around which templates are available to which users.
Right.
You specify what permissions you want, so we can have everything from full control, whether they can print, export, some of these are email orientated, reply all kind of thing.
Right.
We'll just say that we want full control. It doesn't really matter. We just want to protect the information. We hit next. You can specify when you use this template, whether there is an expiration. So I can say, well, anything that contains the word vnext, we want to expire it after 170 days, because basically by that point in time, the information's invalid and we would have moved on to a new plan. So away we go. We hit next. And go through. You can require revocation of the certificate, so you can force a lookup to make sure that the key is still fresh.
Right.
You hit finish, and it's going to create that template, which will take just a sec to process. Ooh, come on.
No worries, it'll come.
It'll come, there we go. So just to show you that we really did actually create that, if we come back into the action here, and we need to probably go out of there and then back in, it's not showing, hasn't quite hit it. There's a process that goes at the back end when you create a template and it turns up. So we'll come back and have a look at that in a second, show you that it's there. Now, if we go back to our client, and we should be seeing, why is that not quite run yet? Something is taking a little bit, here we go, we've got an error message. The control panel, something has gone wrong. Let's take a look. Nothing like troubleshooting in real time.
Nice.
Couldn't sync the file. Aha. So I know what has happened here. As part of my messing around with stuff, we'll come and run this manually. What's happened there is, as I was messing around with rules, it was trying to run the process on the file all at the same time. So it kind of made a bit of a mess there. Now we just need to go back in. And we should be able to open that up. Let's just go in and see what we've got here. We may need to rerun that.
Add a line of text or something like that to make sure it's in your file.
All right, we'll work through it.
Because the schedule you had was set up to say on new file creation, so it's going to make a new file when you make a change to it. That's 12K.
Yeah, so that should come right. The work folders should. Now, what we may need to do is, because it's got itself in a bit of a tangle, there's a bit of a bug that we will make sure that goes away. Okay, so it's gone from there. All good. Okay, we're back to normal. Let's run through that again, and we'll do it. I'll show you how to speed this up.
No problem.
All right, so
I think it's wild just how fast it's created down below there. That's on the server side.
That is it's on the server side and back down as well, so you saw how quick it went backwards and forwards. I save that. Yep, we'll do the V next, and then what we'll do is we'll quickly jump over here and we'll manually run this task that would typically run in the background.
The joys of trying to do something that would normally take a much longer process in a small, condensed amount of
time. We are trying to do this in a very, very short space of time. So,
just so you know, because ignore the timer that's up there, because there's more time. Don't worry about it.
All right. So that is still. And I think we're okay. Something very interesting is going on. We might have a demo failure on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to take that out. All right, so that's gone. You know what? Let's go and grab client 2. I think something funny is going on here. Yeah. Let's let that sync up. I haven't had this one fail on me yet. We might have a first. Okay. All right, so we're syncing up. Okay, so we're at 11 kilobytes, which is good. We should be able to allow that classification rule. Let's make sure that the classification runs. Let's manually kick that off, right? So it's already classified, which is good. Then we're going to run the management task. Which it's not getting that. Oh, we didn't mess with this, did we? When we were... I know, it's still a string. Okay. Just making sure we didn't mess with that rule.
Yeah, break the rule or something like that.
All right, let's just give that some time. I think that we've just got to give it a small amount of time.
Problem.
I think we did something wrong before, and now we'll just let it do its thing.
Let it achieve stasis.
Yeah, exactly. So while that's ticking along in the background, all of those rules are in place. So that's basically dynamic access control, creating that file, it's scanning it. There are iFilters installed on the file server.
Right.
So to be able to read those Office documents and be able to actually scan for that content, being able to get through that, we do install the iFilters. If you're doing something other than Office documents, you'll need to install an iFilter for whatever file type it is that you're actually...
Right, so for Adobe files or for...
If you're using
XYZ
any of that.
File, whatever happens to
be. Yeah, absolutely. So all of that would need to be installed. But that's basically the integration that we've got going on there. So the text document's turning up there. There it is. Now it's worked. Yep. You can see the file is now 144.
Significantly larger than the 12K.
Significantly larger. And we'll see. So that actually synchronized from client 2 up to the server, back down to client 2, and view permissions. So combination of us messing around with rules whilst it's trying to do its job and then just trying to rush it too fast. So
right.
It does work. It is there. We proved that one. So pretty much that's how we went on the way through. We've taken everywhere from registering a device all the way through to the dynamic access control. So let's wrap as we got the last questions on what the components were that actually did the work on the way through.
Okay.
So when we did the workplace join, we had 8.1 clients and we had the proxy server and ADFS and the domain controller.
Client-wise. 8.1?
8.1 and 8.0? iOS. 8.1 and iOS at GA.
Okay.
And then we will have Android and Windows 7 to follow.
Okay, so Windows 7 will be included at some point down in the future.
Post-GA.
Whenever it happens to be.
Yeah, not 8.0.
And I've already answered the question when GA is, and that is whenever it's ready.
Towards the end
so
of the year.
That's all we're saying.
We've committed to this calendar year. I don't believe we've narrowed it down any further than that.
Okay. we could have been running with a older version of Active Directory.
Absolutely. With the
schema changes.
Yep.
But the schema changes have to be put in.
Correct.
The file server has to be 2012 R2 for work folders, 2012
yes.
for
dynamic access.
Control.
Yep.
And what we just showed here for being able to encrypt some stuff.
Correct. And the web application proxy, to be clear on that one, is only required when you go external.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what? There's one thing we didn't cover.
We access the file externally?
We did that. No, we didn't. I did not show the back end of the registered device. So we saw the object in Active Directory.
Right.
The other things that you require are some DNS entries.
Okay.
And so your client, in order to do the device registration, needs to be able to resolve two things. One, it needs to be able to resolve your ADFS service. And so basically there is I'm using adfs.contoso2013.com.
Okay,
that
so
is actually running on server 2.
That has to be publicly exposed as far as what that is.
If you want to do workplace join from external.
From external,
so
yes.
Whether it's internal or external, to be honest, is really a matter of whether you make the web app proxy available or
right.
not. To do device registration internally, you need to be able to resolve your ADFS service, and you must have a very specific registration, which is enterprise registration, dot your domain name.
And that's a CNAME record.
That is a CNAME record that points to ADFS.
Right.
The workplace join functionality is hard-coded to look for that DNS entry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's a very hard and fast rule. You must use that entry, and it must be a CNAME that points to ADFS. There is also some gotchas that are documented in TechNet around the ADFS certificate in order to device registration. You must ensure that your certificate can either, you must either disable CRL for your lab, or you need to ensure that the CRL lookup can happen from the client, otherwise it will fail.
Right.
And you must have the same CNAME and DNS names on the certificate as documented in TechNet as well. It's very specific. If you do not have the CNAME and the two DNS names in the certificate with CRL either disabled or in a functional state, it will fail. And I've been through this with a few of our internal staff as they tested it. You need to have it exactly right from a DNS point of view and a certificate point of view. If you follow the instructions, it does work.
Okay.
So that's pretty much it on the way through. We've gone from outside to in. We've taken a look at the access rules. We've taken a look at the multi-factor authentication, the rules on the way in, the work folders, the workplace join, taking that into account. Do you have any last questions?
I'm just taking a look up in here and see if there's anything else that we missed. For the most part, I think we managed to grab most of those. You know what? How about we go in a little bit of detail around where people can find out how to set up this lab environment and how to do this sort of stuff.
Sure thing.
One way that they can do that, I know, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, if I can find my machine here, is there is a series of blog posts that are available.
Yep.
And I will go in here and can you flip over to my machines for 1 second? You should be seeing just the flowers. Just show me the flowers. It's an extended desktop. There we go.
Oh, look at that.
This is a blog site that is maintained by a variety of people, but Brad Anderson, basically corporate vice president for the Windows Server and System Center Group, blogs here, and he just kicked off a series last week with talking about a series of different pillars, if you will, of ways that we're thinking about this new technology.
Yep.
The one that was kicked off this week with this blog post that just actually went up the other day, yesterday, the 10th of July, is about people-centric IT or PCIT, which is what we're talking about here as part of it. And it's a 2-of-9-part series, so there's a lot of information that's coming out.
Yep.
But it is about what is new in Windows Server 2012 R2. And if I do my due diligence, and I'm just going to pretend that I'm reading all of this, it's very, some of those slides look familiar.
Yes, they should do.
Yeah, they should definitely look familiar. What I wanted to point out is, at the very bottom of this post, there are links to what I would call the engineers and the product teams talking specifically about different technologies that are all supporting this whole pillar of people-centric IT.
Yep.
And you'll have stuff in here about setup of working with work folders on Windows Server 2012 R2, I noticed there at the very bottom, enabling modern work style with 2012 R2 remote desktop services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Each of those links off to a blog post that is all in context of this main one.
Yep.
And so if you're wondering,
there's a top-level set of posts that we're putting out to set the context for what we're doing and why and how it works. And then all the engineering teams and our team and so on are building lots of step-by-step guides so that you can take the preview for a spin, show you how to configure it, give you the depth detail. If you look at the work folders one, for example, Jane wrote a great post on building your own work folders lab. So showing you how to set up all the things that I had running.
There it is there. Yeah, introducing the work folders.
Loads of background. This is coming from the program managers in engineering, the guys who actually spec'd out what these features are and how they work. They're the guys that teach me my stuff, so you know they are the source of all truth. And so they're going to be putting lots of information out in a more scenario-orientated way.
Right.
And then, of course, we have the TechNet content, which is the hardcore kind of step-by-step lab guides and how to get everything in there.
And there is the URL, blogstechnet.com/b/in_the_cloud, which will be having a 9-part series. This is the first one that goes into it with details with Brad and also with the different engineering teams about how to do certain sort of things.
All the way from left to right, we'll be covering all of that and then drilling down and linking out. And even those first ones that we posted, there's a lot more to come. I can assure you there's about 3 pages full of articles that are coming out just from the PCIT team across the file server team, ADFS, the web app proxy team, Active Directory, and so on. So there's a load of information coming to help you guys get started, to test it out. We're in the preview mode heading towards GA later this year. So we'd love to have your feedback. If you've got anything, always feel free to ping me a comment, question. Ping me on Twitter, send me an email, whatever you want.
You
happy to help.
I just wanted to, because there were some questions about this as well, so I'm going to bring up a new slide up here. This is just one of the, we've covered this already from a demonstration perspective, but I just wanted to call this one out from a domain join capabilities and workplace joined and domain joined.
Sure.
Where they all come from. So I build this out completely?
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, if you're not joined to the domain, basically you would have the ability to go off and, you know, browse to a single sign-on environment. Mm-hmm. If you were domain, if you're workplace joined, you obviously can do that. Plus, you can also start to use some two-factor authentication and also have access to enterprise apps and single sign-on availability.
Yep.
And domain join, you actually have all of those, as well as desktop single sign-on as well.
Yeah, it's just from an authentication point of view, it's moving from, you know, any device you want. If you go to hotmail.com and tick the box that says "Remember Me," effectively what that's doing is creating a stateful session cookie on your machine.
Right.
And when you hit that site, it presents the cookie and you get let in. What we do from a workplace join point of view is take into account those credentials that you entered on the device to get the workplace join done, plus the certificate, and basically create a very long-running cookie, if you want to put it in really basic terms.
Can you talk just briefly about Active Directory in the cloud?
Sure.
Concept?
So Active Directory in the cloud, the Windows Azure Active Directory is a cloud version of what we've had with Active Directory for the last decade. It was built from the ground up to be scalable. It's running some 420,000 tenants in it, running through billions of transactions every year. And it's designed to give you authentication in the cloud against cloud applications. And we've seen some announcements around the SaaS applications coming out as well. And of course, we enable you to leverage your on-premises Active Directory and either synchronize between your on-premises AD and the Windows Azure AD, as in synchronize attributes and passwords, or connect them through federation. And it all depends on what your requirements are, whether you have geopolitical and any kind of compliance requirements, or whether you want to run a master-master situation or a master-slave.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's there to enable you to do things at cloud scale and to take advantage of that. Office 365 authenticates against Windows Azure Active Directory. It's the biggest Active Directory we have in the world by a factor of many times.
Yep.
You can take the biggest AD we've got on any customer site, and Windows Azure AD is 20 times bigger than that minimum.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge. So we're running at scale, and we learn from how we do that, and we bring those learnings back down on-premise.
Okay. A little bit of a recap. This was our slide that we had from a recap perspective that simply talks about how to empower your users, how to go off and unify your environment. Any closing thoughts to share?
I think it's we're moving into a new world here, and it's kind of scary at the outset where you look at it and say, someone's got a device that I know nothing about and they want to get their work stuff onto it. Like, it's how's that going to work?
It's not domain join. I can't group policy it. I don't have administrative rights to it.
You've got no access to that device at all. You've got no rights on it. And with Windows Intune bringing in the management aspect and the ability to get apps and data and configuration information down through the BYOD scenarios and Server 2012 R2, we're trying to take away some of that sort of scariness and enable not only for users to use those devices that they want to use to get their work done, but also for IT to have some element of control and say, yes, you can do that, but there are some rules that we have to play by.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, bring that device in, absolutely, but here's what we need you to do. We need you to manage the device so we can at least get apps down to you. And second of all, we need you to workplace join it and register it so that we know which device you're using. That's all we want to know. Just be able to take into account that it's not someone who's stolen your device, but it is actually you on that device.
Okay.
And so really, we're working on those with R2. We've got a lot of new capability coming, so it's going to be fun.
Your thoughts on getting people to start to use this new environment? Requirements, getting yourself up and using Active Directory, the most recent version?
I would, so from a lab testing point of view, we've sort of talked about that, and in the preview very much this is lab testing,
yes,
not for production.
Not for production.
Not for production.
Yes.
As we move towards the final release and move into GA, then we can start to look at production deployments. Getting up to 2012 AD, whilst it's not a prerequisite, it's a recommendation. There's a huge wealth of benefits in moving to Active Directory 2012. And if you haven't seen all of that, please go take a look. There is a lot there. There's a lot of reasons to get to 2012. Then really pick your workload. What is the biggest problem you've got right now? Is it you need to synchronize data with the work folders? Is it that you've got BYOD devices and you need to manage them with Intune and see what that looks like? Is it that you've got data ended up on devices and then people are losing it and it's become a corporate liability, that sensitive information just ended up in the hands of who knows who? Pick your workload, take it through, do your lab testing, talk to your local Microsoft people, talk to the partner ecosystem, and start mapping out a plan of how you're really going to take this control. And take a look at what the cloud services look like as well. Mm-hmm. At what point in time do you consume cloud services and in what way? We've got huge updates coming with Windows Azure. We're releasing functionality on a very rapid cadence. And so being able to leverage those and bring them back down on-premise may well have a lot of benefits, so worth looking into that as well.
Last wrap-up slide I've got over here again is for those that are just joining us, access to go off and download the preview for Windows Server 2012, aka.ms/WS2012R2. If you want to go off and get the download bits, preview bits for System Center 2012R2, aka.ms/SC2012R2. And a reminder for being able to locate other information about some of these technologies that are in 2012 and some of these technologies about how to get up to 2012 and 2012R2, MicrosoftVirtualAcademy.com.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, Adam. It's been
no
great
problem.
Having you here. It's
Thanks,
nice to have a little bit of a break from that other Canadian over there, Mr. Corey Hines. He'll be joining us again in the next session talking about web apps and about IIS and about other really cool things coming your way, too. Thanks for taking time in your day to come and join us.
No problem.
I appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thanks, guys, and good luck.
See you next.